Welcome back to Tahoe Tap, everyone. Your local podcasters, Mike Perrin and Rob Galloway here, delivering a fresh episode for your listening pleasure. Thanks for choosing this episode out of the 70 million podcast episodes living on the internet these days. That's about 5 million podcast hosts out there. There's a lot of them that have, you know, gone dormant or whatnot, but they estimate 70 million episodes. That's pretty crazy. So thank you for choosing us as the one right now. As anticipated, we're keeping it local with a quick roundup of top news around the Tahoe region. And then the majority of our show will be spent getting to know John Rice, general manager and fearless leader of Sierra at Tahoe, which, might I add, received 129 inches of snow in March alone, putting some pie on my face.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, I knew that would be coming up in the news segment. So if you've been a loyal listener, you'll know what we're talking about here in a minute. But first, a word from our sponsor, the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, TRPA, a voice of Lake Tahoe. For more than 55 years, TRPA led the collaborative effort to protect and restore the spectacular region. The agency is committed to protecting the lake while advancing affordable housing solutions, improving transportation, and achieving community revitalization and equity. Learn more and help plan Tahoe's future at TRPA.gov. All right, Rob, the airwaves are yours for the news.
I put this right at the top, Mike, because, you know, like you talked about, that we've been, you know, the past, I don't know, 2-3 shows or so talking about the snowpack, and the measurement came in earlier this week. And I'm really just pushing it back to you because, you know, when we talked about this, I gave you the opportunity to take the over or under, how we would finish at or below average for snowpack. And you took the under. Right. And the measurement at Phillips Station, which is a little southwest from Sierra Tahoe, speaking of Sierra Tahoe, it came in at 113% average. And I know we didn't exactly discuss, you know, what the cutoff date for this was, but April 1st, usually considered that peak. So what do you say, Mike?
Well, yeah, but then you just said, are we going to finish? So are we talking April 21st, the last day of Sierra Tahoe, April 28th, the last day of Kirkwood?
You're grabbing at straws, man.
I sure am, because I, for everybody, yeah, like you mentioned, I guess under, because we had a dismal start to the season, but, you know, coming in like a lion with a big time March. And then on the day of recording here today, Thursday, the April 4th, Mammoth expected to get possibly 2 feet. I'm going to say we'll finish out above 100%. I will revise and redact.
Well, on the note of snowpack, I figured it was a good way to bring up, you know, the idea of fire season, because the warm weather, it's eventually going to take over and we're going to turn our attention to fire season at some point. But given the moisture that we saw, or that we're seeing really to close out the winter, it should indicate, at least to start the season, activity or fire activity should be pretty low. But this winter wasn't last winter, and inevitably we should start to see that vegetation dry out a little bit more and earlier than we did last year. And given the Tahoe region saw less rainfall than normal, and definitely this year in the basin, we can probably expect a more active fire season than last, not necessarily in the basin. I'm just saying, you know, California as in general. But, you know, just be smart. We did have Chief Chad Steven with Lake Valley Protection. He gave us a quick rundown of some springtime fire prevention tips. I'm just going to rapid fire through here. Check your smoke alarms, clean dryer vents and gutters, turn off your heat tape, make sure that you have a family escape plan for your home. Anything that you want to add, Mike? I know you always, and I can never remember it, when you talk about campfires, it's like the three S's, right?
Stir. Oh, man. Yeah, stir, soak, and feel. It's basically, the end one is feel, but it's sense. Yeah. But yeah, with campfire. So, I mean, the ones you mentioned are a lot around your home, right? For in-home fires. But campfire is a big one. You know, 90% of wildfires are caused by humans, not like by lightning, like a lot of people think, or by out of control prescribed burns. But as people get their spring cleaning going, a lot of people are going to be using trailers, cleaning up all this debris, right? Doing their defensible space and making sure you got your trailer chains, those safety chains, up high enough to where they're not sparking and going off the road. That's actually a really big cause of those roadside fires that we see. So that's the one I would add, is make sure those safety chains on the trailers are up off the ground. And you see sometimes like the buses dragging them along their snow chains on the ground that's sparking up, and that's scary. So
Yeah, for sure.
that would be my add there.
Good point. In another story, South Lake Tahoe City Council meeting on Tuesday, they passed the first reading of a resolution that's going to initiate proceedings to annex 90 parcels of county property adjacent to Sierra Tract and Barton Hospital. In the 90 parcels, it's roughly about 40 acres. And this is by no means a done deal, but the idea here is to remove the area from being served in multiple areas by the county and put those under the city's umbrella. And it's kind of a weird little patch and setup there, but you know, we're going to keep an eye on it and figure out how it moves forward and see how it moves forward if it moves forward. But it's just I didn't catch the history of how that got you know, under county supervision, at least in the areas that they're talking about. But it's just kind of a weird little patch there.
And it's front page of the Tahoe Tribune in print. So pick up an edition if you want to learn more on that too.
Yep. And then on a sadder note, over the past weekend, we had an incident at the Truckee Airport where a plane crashed and killed two passengers. And we do know that there has been a story that originated out of Sacramento that does identify the victims. But the sheriff's office, they have not yet to formally release the names. And whenever something like this happens, we always really want to try to get this right. The story that came out of Sacramento, it really could be accurate. But from what we gathered and what we were digging on, I think it was yesterday, you know, the story was based on social media reports, and that's really not where we want to be, as far as our reporting goes. So really, until we get that official release, we're just going to say our thoughts and prayers go out to the, you know, the friends and families of the folks who passed. But just to give you a little insight there, it's not that we, you know, if you're trying to look for that news or trying to find out, it's not that we're not covering it. It's just that we don't want to be inaccurate in that case. That's just not a good place for us to be. And then one last item here before we duck out of the news. If you're one who enjoys eating out, the week of April 15th through the 21st, so that's coming up, it's going to be the inaugural restaurant week for Incline Village in Crystal Bay. So if you have a favorite restaurant in Incline, go check them out or visit, I think it's ivcba.org. They have a list of restaurants and what's going on there. But Mike, you have a favorite restaurant up there in the North Shore in Incline? And you can't say tease.
Oh man, you got me there. Well, I'm gonna go right next door with Incline Burger. That's a pretty stellar one. I don't eat well, where I was gonna say not in Kings Beach much, but well, that's not part of this, right? Because it doesn't drop over the Crystal Bay side. So Incline Burger has just such a natural tasting, sort of like the person's roller skating up to your 57 Chevy and, you know, giving it to you style burger. That's the taste I get, even though I wasn't alive back in 57.
No.
But that's the vibe I get from Incline Burger. What about you?
I don't, you know, it's hard to single them out. I mean, I write, you know, two food columns a week, and I try to get around the entire basin in Truckee and Myers, and I don't know. I think Sage Leaf is one of my favorites up there.
I knew you were going to say
I just, I
that.
mean, they do a good job. I just recently, this is a couple of weeks ago, featured their braised bacon, tacos, which are a breakfast taco. Really good if you ever want to get out there and get it, or check out my write-up on it. But they always do it up there really well.
Yeah, coming soon in Tahoe Summer Magazine, just a few weeks out, 24 tacos to try in 2024.
Yeah,
And
that was
it
a
took
fun
you
one.
a while, so I
Took
want to
me a
see
while.
somebody like get stamping that passport, and hell, we'll give you a prize. We don't know what it is yet, but
I need a
if you hit
prize.
all of those, yeah, you should get it. You got to eat all the
That's a good prize.
tacos. That's your prize. Yeah. All right. So that's your news hits right there. Now let's talk about our guest coming up. We mentioned him, Mr. John Rice. I mean, we've had some pretty big guests on this show, but you know, like Julie Reagan having impact on the Tahoe region and policy wise, right? Just a few episodes ago, or stars like Devil Makes Three, but possibly the most popular by way of just sheer number of employees that he's led, the impact on a specific industry in the snow sports and resorts industry. And I could go on and on there. I mean, I literally mentioned it. He's sort of a digital ninja. It was hard to write up a biography on him and get info on. He doesn't have a Wikipedia page. There's none of that. He's a real ninja. But he does a fantastic job of laying the groundworks of his early years in his career with our first question,
Interesting.
but a little bit of stuff he did not mention. You know, he's been in the ski area management business for 46 years now, 31 of those being at Sierra at Tahoe. But he mentioned the Squaw Valley USA, Sierra Summit, Snow Summit, Bear Mountain, and of course his tenure right now that he's currently at Sierra at Tahoe. He's also really well known for bringing snowboarding in general. You know, everybody thinks of Burton Snowboards and Tim Burton as doing that, or Jake Burton, and he's credited with also doing the terrain park push into resorts and the snow park technologies, SPT, that crew, and really giving them advice. He also has a really world renowned consulting business that he doesn't talk about much, where he travels around the world and advises other resorts on what's been working here in Tahoe and what might work for them.
He
So,
touches on it a little bit in our
yeah.
Conference.
Yeah, he just breezes over it like it's nothing, but he's traveling around the world. And then what he does here locally, he doesn't really get booked around the world for this, but he gets booked almost every weekend at Sierra. He's a musician on the side, and he mentions that too. Preacher's Pickers, if you've never seen him playing in the pub at Sierra, like what other GM is doing that, right? Well, except for Ted Kennedy.
Ted Kennedy,
which is great, right? You see him just leading by example, and he's a big proponent of, you know, active youth sports in the South Tahoe community and giving back. So we'll hear more from him, but you know, one great quote I found online from one of his peers in the industry is John Rice has always been out there leading instead of following, and that really just sums it up. And you'll get all of that here and more in just a second. But a shout out to Tahoe Mountain Inn, making this podcast possible. Escape to the heart of South Lake Tahoe, where adventure meets comfort and every stay is a memory waiting to be made. Welcome to Tahoe Mountain Inn, your cozy mountain retreat nestled amidst the breathtaking Sierra Nevada. Whether you're hitting the slopes at Heavenly Mountain Resort, embarking on a scenic hike along the Tahoe Rim Trail, or rolling the dice at the casinos, Tahoe Mountain Inn puts you right in the heart of it all with its time to relax. When it's time to relax, South Lake Tahoe's newest boutique inn provides a perfect combination of free parking, dog-friendly vibes, no extra resort fees, kind of experience you're looking for. TahoeMountainInn.com. All right, without further ado, John Rice from Sierra at Tahoe. All right, John, you are live on the airwaves here of Tahoe Tap, and I'm going to kick it off with the questions, and I'm going to put you up on a pedestal here. Now is not the time to be the most human, the most humble human like you always are. I mean, because I want to know a little bit of the background, because you're sort of a digital ninja on the internet. I don't know how you've done it, man. You're an absolute legend. But no, not many photos or descriptions online. Don't even have a Wikipedia page. I mean, it was tough to find some stuff out about you. So not sure how you accomplished that in this day and age, but I guess touche. Tell us a little bit of your background. I mean, you were a professional snowboarder, half pipe. You won a SAMMY, a Ski Area Management Award, back in 2001. Tell us a little bit about JR, John Rice.
Well, what can I say? I started working in the ski industry right out of college. I wasn't much of a skier from Southern California. I grew up in the ocean. And I, as part of my internship in a rec program at Chico, I talked to the folks there and they let me do an internship at a ski resort. And they said, we've never had that before. And there had never been an intern. So I had to kind of go out and create a program. I applied to just about every resort I could think of in California, and no one would accept me. I went up to Squaw Valley at that time, which is now Palisades, and I met with someone. And I basically told him, look, I worked for free. I'm a college kid. I worked at Disneyland for 3 years. I know a lot about crowds and systems, and I think I can add some value. And so that was 1977. Okay. So long time ago. And I was able to convince the gentleman there that was running the mountain at that time that I was going to be able to add some value. He told me to you know, start, go out and start learning. And so I did. I think everyone thought I was a narc because I was not from the inside there, and that I was going to be leaking information to management what happened was there was a big organization of employees against the company around the holidays, around the president's holiday. And as a result of that, they let about 100 people go after the holiday. And they asked me if I wanted an increase in responsibilities. And so by the end of my internship, I actually had a job working in the lift operations department as the supervisor. And I had worked a lift all of 3 days in my life prior to that. But my ride operator experience at Disneyland kind of gave me a leg up. And I was fortunate. I had a great mentor there who's no longer there. And he kind of took me up with him when he left the company, left me with a role as director of operations. So I basically had, you know, 350 employees at age 24 and four departments. And I was in a really good place. And I was learning about the ski business and learning how to ski, actually. So a lot of fun. I left there in 82. I went down to Big Bear. I left for cause. I was terminated for throwing a big party called the Thanks for Nothing Party, which probably wasn't a good idea at the time. But I did get a job down in Southern California at Snow Summit Ski Resort. And I had grown up in the ocean learning how to surf and stand sideways skating. So I took up snowboarding, which was still kind of new on the scene. Most resorts were not accepting it. And at that time, I was able to come up speed pretty quick. My first lesson was from Tom Sims and a kid named Bert Lamar, who went on to be a world champion. Lamar snowboards, became a good friend. And together, he basically talked me into building a terrain park. And as director of operations down there, at night, we went out and we started building jumps, which was, at that time, they were tearing jumps down. So weren't supposed to be doing that. Did a lot of wear and tear to the equipment and finally had to cop to it that I was not only snowboarding on the mountain that didn't allow it at night, but also building jumps and tearing them down in the morning. So those were really the first attempts at building features that eventually turned into a full-time terrain park once snowboarding was accepted in Southern California and really took off. So I was on the front edge of the whole sort of revolution, if you will. I was a little older at the time. I was not like a lot of the younger kids that were coming right out of, you know, out of the skiing into snowboarding and right out of the ocean. So, but I was there on the front edge of all of it. It was really cool. I learned a lot, met a lot of people. It gave me a little bit of a name in the industry. And I came up here in 1993, took over Sierra Ski Ranch as the GM, and I've been here ever since. I've had a lot of opportunities to go to other resorts have been made a lot of job offers, but I've just really found myself here. Someone said, if you've got a good thing, why would you want for more? Just enjoy what you've got and make the most out of it. And this community worked out really well for me. Having been in Tahoe once, I really wanted to get back home and found myself here and have been here ever since.
Man, I hope Netflix catches wind of this podcast. And I think we got a documentary in the making, sort of like a Lords of Dogtown movie kind of thing. I think we're onto something here, John.
I've been called the godfather of terrain parks, but my son recently and his wife had a baby, so now I'm the grandfather of terrain parks.
Oh, nice.
Official.
Embracing it. I love it. So throughout your tenure, your career, what's been the highest accolade or achievement award that you are most proud of?
Well, I've been honored with some pretty awesome stuff. I've been in the business a long time. And I've been able to meet a lot of incredible people. I've had some of the best mentors one could have in this industry and learned a lot from them and others. And I've been awarded some pretty cool things. The Golden Camelot was probably one of the coolest ones here locally with the Adventure Film Festival. And to be just listed my name with some of the other greats that were there was very humbling. I did get a sort of a California ski resort industry lifetime achievement award last year. That was nice for all the years I put into this side of the industry in California and leadership roles. But mostly just seeing people graduate and move up and on. They come to Sierra University, we call it. I've had five people grow on to be general managers that have moved on from Sierra. And so that's probably my biggest accomplishment is seeing the growth of other people that come here and move on to bigger and better things. And feel like maybe I had something to do with mentoring them, giving back a little bit. So
Nice.
Ah, man, that's a stacked list. All right, so now into Sierra at Tahoe, sort of change of pace a little bit. For someone who hasn't been to the resort since the Caldor fire, describe the new style or vibe of the resort that was, and I'm doing air quotes, forged from flames, as you see that you guys have noted on the signs driving up to the lifts.
Well, you know, when the fire hit, it wasn't supposed to hit first. I actually serve as an elected official here in Lake Tahoe. I'm on our fire board. I'm here of Lake Valley, and so I was going to the meetings during the when the Calder fire first started, 60 miles away. And I was told, "No, don't worry, it's not going to get to you." I said, "Well, I've got resources if we need to set up camp here or anything." As it became closer and closer, it just it became a nightmare eventually, with a lot of issues lining up. Obviously, humidity, fuels in the forest, wind driven, fires spotting miles ahead of where they were fighting it. So there were just a, you know, the perfect storm unfortunately unfolded and hit this resort. And today, actually, I was just out today skiing, and you know, it's a different resort. For the first year, obviously we were pretty down, and what happened to our lovely big tall trees and you know, our beautiful landscape here. And just kind of going through every day driving in, just feeling this feeling of, I mean, there's times I had to pull over in tears, just couldn't even come up the road sometimes. After doing it enough, got to where we started talking about my mountain manager and I at that time, Paul Baran, local guy, been with me for 25 years, said, "John, you know, let's bring it back. We can do this and it just might be better." So that kind of became our rallying cry. And Paul and I, at that time, you know, made a pact. We're going to do everything in our power to pull it back together. So we did devise a plan, worked with the local agencies, were able to get some support, some legislative support. I went back to DC and banged on doors looking for support and money, and we're able to put a plan together through the Resource Conservation District to take all the hazard trees out. And then we have a very resilient crew here that was dedicated to looking at all of our lift damage, because every single one of our lifts and toes were affected by the fire. And so we said, you know, let's do this. Let's bring this back. And you know, the spirit of Sierra is still here. The great vibe, the family feel is still here. The plaza still rocks when the sun's shining. Yes, the mountain looks a little different. You know, we were closed for a year trying to kind of figure out what was going on, and sifting through the ashes and looking at how we were going to pick up the pieces. And it was one of our managers who said, "You know, let's stop apologizing and being victims. Let's be victors of this. Let's look at this from a different lens. And what happened happened. We can never go back. Let's embrace it. Let's embrace our new landscape, and let's put our arms around it and not make apologies for it. Let's own it." And that became a rallying cry. Unfortunately, our mountain manager Paul passed away unexpectedly. He's still thought of very highly here, and his picture's up in the pub, and we blame him for last winter. And but Paul, you know, he was the sort of the genesis of the idea of it might be better. And you know, I've had quite a few people. I cannot go out on a day and not have someone stop me and say, "Thank you for bringing this resort back. This is my history here, 3 generations skiing here. This is my home. This was my job years ago. We are so happy that Sierra's back." So yeah, I guess it was going from, you know, just this catastrophic loss and changing our mindsets to, "All right, we've got this. We're going to do it. We're going to need some help. We all have to work together. But on the other side of this, we're going to come out on the other side. We're going to bring the history of this resort back. We're going to keep that family-friendly vibe and all those great things that people love about Sierra. The landscape's going to look different. It's going to react differently to weather and snow and wind, but it's still an awesome place." That's all I can say after being out there today. It's still, when you come down the mountain and you get to the bottom and you say, "This is still a wonderful piece of earth."
Yeah, I mean, I found myself when I took some friends from out of town that hadn't skied Sierra since the fire. I sort of summed it up in the way of like, the runs that you loved are still there. The staff that you loved, the vibes are still there. You just have to dodge less trees now. And it gives it a totally different spring vibe when you're out there skiing in that sun-touched snow under Grandview. And it's not as sort of moguled out. So It's only better, I think. I mean, tragic as it was, I think it's much better. So, in this, you mentioned some of the tree removals. Is there going to be more of that happening this summer and fall, or did you sort of hit the
You
extent
know,
of?
all the Sierra forests have been stressed for years with drought that happened years ago. That there's still forests are still recovering from some of that with the wet winters. But we were starting to see a little bit of tree mortality prior to the fire. Even add that to the fuels that were loaded up on the forest floor, it wasn't a good situation. So there would have been some natural tree mortality had there been no fire. The fire obviously goes after. When trees are in a weakened place, they can obviously be affected even more. And, the first time through a couple of years ago, when we first started the tree remediation, we saved every single tree that had one green pine needle on it. And our goal was to not take anything down that had a chance to make it. Year two, we started to see where some trees were definitely not going to make it. We brought in quite a few silviculturists and foresters who helped us understand. We're not, I didn't study that in school. I've been in the forest my whole life, but helped us understand when cambium layers are affected in the bark and what happens and likelihood of that tree surviving or not. So we did see some mortality that we didn't plan on. So we took some trees out this year that we thought were going to make it. We're probably going to have to do that every year for the next 4 or 5 years until the forest fully kind of recovers itself from that event. In the meantime, we are planting a lot of seedlings and we're watching a lot of trees grow naturally. The fire opened some seed pods and there's some natural growth occurring in some areas that were, precipitated by the fire. So we'll continue to work with this forest and this landscape, and yeah, there will be future work to be done. So.
Yeah, a learning process, it sort of sounds like too, or an adaptation of sorts. My last question before sort of a rapid fire. I recently heard a rumor from a couple pro athlete parents that are doing great out on the half pipe circuit right now. You guys got approval to basically build out a half pipe like Mammoth or North Star does, where it's sort of ready in the summer or the fall, and then when needs a lot less snow to have that imp half pipe infrastructure. Any validity to that or
Yeah,
update?
actually, so the Forest Service has been great working with us with the new landscape. It brought opportunities for some new trails, maybe new ways of looking at, and to Paul's point, it just might be better. And so we did the NEPA work right after the fires before we started the tree remediation. And with that, we also asked the Forest Service if we could reconsider some projects that we've talked about in the past. And they were very receptive to how do we make Sierra a place that can grow and even become better. And so a dirt half pipe was one of the approvals that we got. We also had approval for some dirt mounds on the backside so we could build jumps a little sooner, moving some earth around boulders. There's several projects that we have sort of stacked up with approvals ready to go. And it's just a matter of, prioritizing what the resort needs and what we want to do. But the agency has been really awesome about helping us find ways to get through the approval process to be able to work with this new landscape and bring a new product. For example, we're doing some test wells this summer to look to maybe start to add more snowmaking. So again, working with our agency, the Forest Service, they've been super responsive to our questions there, and things like a dirt half pipe are already approved.
That's music to my ears. Yeah, I love as much as Sierra is sort of that natural terrain park all over the mountain. I love riding half pipe. And so less snow in a more environmentally friendly way and less work, I'm all for it. All right, rapid fire, real quick, and then I'm gonna turn it over to Rob. So here we go. Sunrise or sunset?
Oh boy, I see a lot of sunrises coming to work, and I've seen some pretty awesome ones. Not quite the colors you see at sunset, but boy, that time of morning is sure special. I'll go with sunrise.
All right, sweet or savory in the culinary department?
I have to say I have a sweet tooth, and I do hit our local bakeries up to try some of their treats.
All
I have a hard time saying no to a nice pastry in the morning, so I'm going to go with sweet.
pen and paper or digital notes for you when you're at work?
I do find I've got all the gadgets in the world, iPads and phones and note taking. I'm still an old school guy because I like to doodle as well. And sometimes when I doodle, it gets my thoughts right. So I'll stick with pen and paper for my notes.
All right. So I guess sort of a tech question as well. Text messages or phone calls? Which style are you?
Seems to be some people seem to respond better with text. I like good old-fashioned face-to-face, but I a lot of times too people won't answer their phone. So text, usually it's a one-way message. It doesn't come back. It has to come back to be communication. But I will text, "Hey, when are you available so we can talk?" Or, "When can we meet face to face?"
Coffee or tea?
Coffee for sure. Love a good cup of coffee.
Yeah. Use Spotify or Pandora?
Spotify.
Okay. Audiobooks or paper books?
I just started the audiobooks with Prime, and I've done two of them for driving. I love it. It's not like holding a book in your hand, but you can still get a lot of information when you're on the road. And a lot of times I like to get on the road and let my mind wander a little bit. But a good podcast or a good book on tape is a good way to take it all in.
All right, and then your favorite new local restaurant that you've tried recently, or it can be, if you're a total creature of habit, one that you just hitting up. But is there anything new out there that you've tried here in
Well, I
Tahoe?
do like Primo's, and I like the fact that their news is that they're going to move into a new facility and the lake house there and take it to the next level. I'm very excited about that because love the quality of their food, and the vibe, the feeling in there is pretty cool.
We
So,
were just talking about that, Rob and I,
awesome.
earlier today. So stoked for them at Primo's. All right,
Yeah,
Rob, take it away, sir.
I was talking to Kent over at Ernie's, and he was pretty stoked that he was going to have Primo's as his neighbor.
Yeah, Jim just does it right. The food's great. And my family, my girls are gluten-free, and they make some good options there as well. So we're going to be regulars at that place for sure.
All right, John. So you kind of went into this a little bit, but describe this roller coaster of emotions for you over the past 3 years, because that first winter after the Caldor fire, you really didn't open at all, maybe a couple of, localized events towards the very end. But then you went into just an insane winter that we had last winter to this winter, which, had kind of been ho-hum up until, the past month or so, but it had to have been a roller coaster, right?
Well, it continues to be, and that's pretty much can describe my whole career with this industry. I was one of my best mentors taught me that adaptability is the key to survival. It was my first employee review when I was at Squaw Valley, and I said, "Well, of course it is. There's no dinosaurs anymore." And he goes, "No, I mean, think about it. Your ability to adapt to events that happen around you, situations around you, whether on a daily basis or major changes in life, really determines whether you can be successful on the other side. If you are taken down by those events or those activities or those things, then yeah, you curl up in a ball and you can't really do anything. But if you can get through those and learn from them, the adaptability factor will really help your success in life." So I've always lived by that, and I've tried to teach that to employees and my own children, and it certainly applies here. It is absolutely the key to survival. When COVID hit, for example, how are we going to slice this one? They're closing down Disneyland, and they're closing, baseball games, and you can't go to anywhere. So we were on a mission. We went down to Sacramento and met with all the right folks and said, "Look, we think we have an activity we can do outdoors, and we can ski, and we can be in the mountains, and we're on moving chairlifts, and you're wearing goggles." And we were able to convince our state government and health officials that that was one activity that made sense. So we actually had a pretty good year that year, even though we had to close the restaurants and all the indoor stuff. The whole organic thing happened in the parking lots with all the tailgating, and we actually had a pretty good feeling tone going on the deck, even though you weren't supposed to be within 6 feet of anyone. We figured it out as an industry. The fire coming through, obviously devastating loss. I mean, the mountain was closed for a whole year. A lot of folks, we had to lay people off. We went from 800 employees down to like 30. It was just so tough to deal with that on the people side of it. And for me, that's always been the focus here at Sierra, is managing through finding the right people and giving them the resources they need, and watching them go and be successful. So that was probably the hardest part. A lot of people mid-career had to make a change or move on, or find another home. We had to send our employees and our guests to other resorts and hoping they'd come back someday. But we got through it. We opened for those 2 days in the spring, and we showed everyone we're going to do this. Again, that was a roller coaster, to say the least. Into the next summer, when I lost mountain manager again, another just total setback. I was actually close to the end of my career and considering possibly having him take over, having Paul take over the resort. And obviously, I'm still here because I couldn't leave after everything has happened. And I can't leave until this resort is truly back on its feet and running like it should. But the adaptability was needed beyond all our staff's part for that year was a tough one. We came back, had the biggest 700-inch winter, like 58 feet of snow. It snowed every 15 minutes and it wouldn't stop. As you guys know, 50 was closed. We couldn't get to work if we wanted to. When we did get here, the volume of snow we were seeing, and in our new landscape, minus the trees in West Bowl and the winds, really had an impact on our operations. So that was just a learning time. We made it through. We got to the other side. We had to close the tree runs that were off trail, the off piste stuff we had to close. You probably remember seeing our trail app had some brown shaded areas on it that were closed due to just the tree remediation hadn't been completed in those areas. And that was a challenge because a lot of our loyal season pass holders and that were, you know, those are their favorite runs. We were able to keep Jack's Bowl open, but we couldn't have, you know, Business Passion and a lot of the backcountry and a lot of, you know, the backside of the mountain, Able, a lot of those areas had to remain closed until we were able to do that work. So again, adapting to another phase two of tree cutting on the east side of the mountain. You guys probably know I have a band called Preacher's Pickers. We named it after Preacher's Passion Ski Run. Simon Kurth, myself, were up there taking a ski run before a gig one day on Preacher's, and we decided that's the name of our band. So, you know, it looks completely different now. I was looking at it today, and it's not what it used to be. It's different. It's a wide open, big, beautiful ski trail now with lots of snow on it, as opposed to the tree run that it used to be. So it is constant adaptation. Our guests have had to adapt. Our employees have had to adapt. We're going to continue to have to. The winds that came early this year with no snow, but a lot of, you know, winter sort of storm activities that just came in sideways. The snow wasn't falling up and down, straight down. It was coming in at an angle or sideways and literally blowing from the southwest all the way to the east side of the mountain. The 4-day blizzard we had last month where it just, you know, we had 30-foot snow drifts on the east side of the mountain. So again, learning, growing, taking notes, avalanche control routes we never had to worry about before. We're still in the midst of that roller coaster ride, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. It's been a very challenging year financially for us because we just didn't get Christmas and President's Holiday and obviously the Martin Luther King holiday. We missed those three holidays. And we were essentially, you know, on frost for the first 30, 40 days of the season. But we're back. The snow picked up in February and March was wonderful. And we are, I mean, the mountain's white. We've got spring ahead of us. There's another storm brewing here next day or two. And we're going to finish on a high note. So hopefully that roller coaster ride, we're going to finish with our arms in the air, our eyes wide open, screaming all the way to the, and maybe go one more lap. So,
yeah. Can you, I mean, as far as, you know, you have a wealth of experience and, you know, you keep a pretty good pulse on what's going on in the industry. Can you give me like one negative and one positive that you see happening within the ski industry right now? And it doesn't necessarily have to be specific to Sierra. You have your own challenges there, but maybe more the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I am very involved across, I actually do consulting work in about 13 countries on terrain, park and ski cases. So I do get out there quite a bit. I think governmental overregulation has really affected our ability to be successful. It's affected our ability to be profitable. There's a lot that goes into that, but it's made it very challenging to run a business, particularly here in California. We're on relatively thin margins. I think people look at Skiria ticket prices and think, oh, they're all rich, fat millionaires. Well, that's just not the case. It is a very thin margin we operate on. And when your costs continue to be driven up by just a lot of factors, inflation and utility costs and food, you name it, wages. Yeah, sure. It just makes it challenging. So trying to eke out a profit is more of a challenge than it used to be just across the board. And of course, the whole industry landscape has changed with different companies now having multiple resorts owned. So that certainly is something that we're all adapting to and trying to figure out, making sure we're adding good value. I will tell you, after being on the mountain today, it's still a great value to go spend a day on the mountain and in this alpine air and cruise down a ski run on freshly groomed snow. I mean, of all things that you would pay money to go do that, I have to say that's still a pretty awesome thing that you can do. Every region has its challenges every year. It either snows or doesn't snow in the Rockies or the East Coast or the West. But across the industry, I think it's getting harder to find employees. And, work ethic has changed. And the amount of governmental regulations we're up against does make it challenging to run a business like this.
Sure, sure. All right. So one more question. This is an easy one for you before I close this out. For you personally, what is your favorite resort, ski or snowboard, depending on what you're doing nowadays, around the region that's not named Sierra? And if you don't want to, show favoritism to a specific resort, or you feel bad by mentioning somebody and not another, you can also give me a single run that maybe you have the most fun with.
Okay. Well, it's easy one for me. I started my career at what is now called Palisades at Squaw Valley. And it is a fantastic mountain with many personalities and faces. And I knew every nook and cranny when I worked there. I could chase the sun all day long. I could find powder staffers a week after a storm. I still love that mountain. It's grown and changed a little bit since I was there. I left in 1982, but I still love going back. I was there 2 weeks ago, actually, speaking at an organization there, and I went out on the mountain for a little bit, and it's still just an incredible, beautiful place. So I'd have to say Palisades.
All right. Well, that makes sense then. Well, John, I want to say thank you so much for your time here, your candor, and, you're always a great conversation. You can spin a yarn for sure. I think Mike had mentioned that, but yeah, I really appreciate your time coming on the show, and, we look forward to what's coming up in the spring for you. I know you got a couple of things coming up here, but any last closings?
I'll just say that I've always believed that one of my mentors taught me, you have to put back your community. You don't just take. And so you really should focus on one or two things. Don't try to do it all for everyone. And when I first got here, everyone had their hand out. They wanted support for this and that. And we supported every organization in town that we could, but we really honed in on youth recreation and education. That's paid off huge. Our straight A season pass program with the schools has just taken off. There's over 300 kids getting a season pass every year, and it's helping their education. And when they go to college, they have a higher GPA. So, it's really a positive thing. Growing athletes from their first time skiing through our ski school programs and race teams to where we have three kids that have come home with gold medals from the Olympics. And we've got a couple more on the cusp that are right there, ready to join the U.S. teams. And so that's been very rewarding as part of this community. I kind of look at Sierra where our front porch is South Lake Tahoe, Myers community. Our back porch is Placerville, Apple Hill, the whole West Slope. And, we're situated right in the middle of those two awesome communities. And we've made great relationships with a lot of folks. We have a lot of support coming from both directions. A lot of employees come from both directions. And so, we're in a really cool spot. Despite the fire, everyone's rallying for us, wanting us to come home and kind of giving back the love that we've tried to put out in the community. And, that part's been pretty cool for me. So.
Great. Well, everybody, he is John Rice here at Tahoe. If you haven't checked out the resort in some time, it's changed a little bit, but give him a spin. And for Mike Perrin and myself, Rob Galloway, this is the Tahoe Tap. We appreciate you listening. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.